Kick-Ass Best, sharing tips to help empower you to take control of your career.
All righty, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us again. Today we have Dr. Youern with us, and we're very lucky to have Dr. Youern join us today to talk to us about his experiences since graduating vet school. I met Youern when he was doing his internship, and I was working as a vet in an emergency clinic in Melbourne, and we had a lovely time working out and hanging out together. I did anyways. I probably harassed him a little bit. So today, Youern's going to tell us a bit about his history, and then we're going to bug him about the ins and outs of his experience as an internship and what to look for, what not to look for. I know some things that he thought he was going to get, he didn't get, and how that kind of worked out for him in the end. So with no further ado, this is Dr. Youern. So if you want to let us know kind of your vet background and a little bit about yourself, that would be great.
Thank you very much, and hello, I'm Youern. I graduated university from Nottingham Vet School in 2016, and then I started my internship with Animal Accident Emergency in Melbourne 6 months after graduation, and currently I'm working for Petstock in Melbourne as well, so where I am at the minute, and I'm so far enjoying First Opinion after coming back from after doing internship in animal emergency. So yeah, currently really enjoying it at Stock.
Good. So what made you decide to go into an internship? Did you work for 6 months before the internship?
I did actually. I did spend 6 months, well, more like 5 months back home in Malaysia. That's where I'm from. So home's Malaysia, and I did spend 5 months in a small animal hospital there. And I think the plan was always to practice somewhere with higher animal welfare standards compared to Malaysia. Because, but with Malaysia, it's just a little bit tricky because I was trained in the UK, and working back home, it's very different because we tend to see a lot more welfare cases where it's more treating neglected animals and not so much working up things like diagnostic, doing much diagnostic at all. So I felt like I wasn't progressing since graduating from vet school. So hence why the decision to go somewhere with higher animal welfare standards. And emergency has been something I was never comfortable with. I think that was the main reason I wanted to do it, because I just feel bad because I didn't know what. When I first graduated, I wasn't confident or comfortable dealing with emergencies. And that was, you know, I made an effort just to make sure I want to get to a stage where I know what to do, and then a scary thought to think that, like, I'm a vet now, but I still don't know how to deal with an animal hit by a car. So that's the main trigger for me to do it. But I think that was the biggest motivation. But otherwise, and I visited Melbourne before, and I actually really liked it here. And so I think that's something that helped with the decision as well. So yeah.
Cool. And when you were lining up the internship, was it an emergency internship with a little bit of other stuff on the side? Like, how was it advertised in that sense? And what were you expecting from that internship in terms of supervision versus sole charge, that kind of stuff?
To be honest, I can't actually remember what was actually being advertised. At that point, it wasn't the easiest thing to get a job in Melbourne. So I literally applied a lot of jobs, and then the emergency was the only one that's applied, was the only internship that I've applied. And then I did have my reservations about it because I knew it was going to be a tough one, but I did it anyway because I think that was the easiest way for me to get to Melbourne from Malaysia. I think it was definitely advertised as a proper internship where you get like specialist guidance and basically supervision most of the time, but it didn't happen. Anyway, I just went into internship with like prepared to do anything, and I didn't really have a plan like what I want to get out from this. I just wanted to get thrown in the deep end and just learn from the bottom up.
You definitely got thrown in the deep end.
That was the attitude I had going into it. So I was prepared to do a lot, like working like terrible hours and things like that. Otherwise, I didn't really have like a huge expectation from it. Like, I knew it was going to be tough and I knew it was going to be like hard work, but I was prepared for it. It wasn't a bad internship. I think I learned a lot from it. Like, I'm not a very book person where I could sit down and study. I like to do stuff like physically. Like, I'm quite a hands-on person, so it does help. Like, I'd rather do like looking after 10 different patients than going through webinars and going through research papers and see what is the latest treatment. I'd rather be in there on the spot and ventilating patients. That's probably what I liked. And I think I was really lucky to have really supportive like colleagues and mentors while I was there, and it was good.
Were there any downsides to the internship that you wish didn't happen?
I guess the biggest challenge has always been client communication for me. And when I first started, like, the biggest thing is I always doubt myself. Like, I'll get like a patient vomiting and diarrhea, and then I'll be like, it could be just anywhere from like a mild gastro thing to like possible organ failure. And as a fresh grad, I feel like I need to know everything, and the owners are spending a lot of money, and I can't just go in there and say it could be this, it could be that, and I want to run all these tests, and it might not be what I think it is. And then that's probably the hardest thing, trying to convince myself that this is the right thing to do. And over time, it's something that I picked up that you just have to go with your gut. And then as long as you've got a safety net, like telling the owners that it could be this, but I could be completely wrong. And with emergency, it gets a bit more complicated when money is an issue, when you can't run many tests and you just have to treat based on best guess. And
yeah.
So yeah, I think I struggle with that a lot, like communicating with the clients, especially if you're not 100% sure. And plus when you're a new graduate, and they can tell if you're not confident with what you're saying, like they will attack you. They will try and make you feel bad. And there's some of them will literally ask for antibiotics and just try that and see what happens. So I think that was my biggest thing, like trying to convince myself that it's the right thing to do and relaying that information to the owners, saying like, we should do this and it's going to give us the best result. And in terms of value-wise, is you're spending this amount of money, but we are doing things properly. We're not doing things we're doing this so that we don't miss anything too crazy. Although 90% of the time, it could be just a mild gastro, but we can't. If it's a foreign body, like we could be looking at possible dead patient if you don't go in sooner.
Yeah.
So I think, communication was a tricky one for me. Otherwise, majority of my internship was pretty positive. Like, I mean, it is stressful, but I think that's what I would expect. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Do you feel more confident now with that communication aspect? I think all new grads have that. I need to know the answer right away. I know I definitely went through that, and now I've been practicing long enough where I'm like, if I think I know the answer, I know it's going to prove me wrong. I've been proven wrong by surprises so many times that I think as you gain that experience and realize that the test exists for a reason, you get comfortable in yourself not knowing the answer, and then you can display that confidence to the owner of not knowing the answer. Do you feel you're there yet?
No, like, look, I've got a nurse where she's really good at x-rays and stuff, so yeah, like, even till now, like, I still doubt myself all the time, like, especially skin issues, like, it's a tricky one, and sometimes I've seen this case where it's got this classic lesions on the head, on the neck, on the ears, and then it's, like, a food allergy, and then you try and treat it with different diets, but it's still not working, and then you send to a dermatologist, and it's like, oh, it's definitely not a food thing, it's atopic dermatitis, and then, I don't think I'll ever get to that stage where I feel like, oh, I don't have to run tests, I know this is it. I guess unless it's a really straightforward one.
No, not getting to the point where you don't need the test, to the point where you're confident enough to know you need the test. I guess that's more like, do you feel that it's easier talking to clients now that you've had that experience to be like, look, there's no way I can know without the test. We have to do the test.
Exactly. Like, I think x-rays are a good example. Like a vomiting dog. To me at this point, I just give them, it helps. Like, if you lay out what the worst case scenario is, if you don't do this, then they will understand. They eventually will understand, because, like, unless they're really, really tight with money, then even then, I've got a really flexible boss. Like, I'm actually allowed to do, like, a cheeky one view x-ray just to make sure there's nothing blowing up in there.
You should value yourself and charge appropriately for your services. You knew I was going to get mad at you for that one.
No, we'll get into that next time, but that's something I'm definitely guilty of. And it's definitely, I've definitely learned, like, it's the way how you value the test. And if you put, I guess, the kind of position where if something were to happen to the animal and they decline testing, then it's their responsibility, like, it will be at fault. And most of the time, like, they do value the animals. Like, it's just they're trying to do what they can at the same time, like, trying to get as cheap as possible. Again, just trying to convey that it's important. Like, we just need to make sure it's fine. And
so, in terms of that confidence of having that conversation, if you could talk to yourself back on the day one that you graduated, what would you say to yourself? And what would you say to other new grads about that specific client interaction?
I feel like a lot of it is experience. So you just have to, like, pick on body language and see, are they the kind of clients that are going to be tricky? Because I feel like, I don't know if I've got any advice for this. Like, to me, it's just going through, seeing different people and seeing how they react. And if you feel like, I don't know, like, I don't think anyone should listen to what I say, to be honest. I guess I would say if I were to, go back and tell myself what I should be doing, like, knowing that what I know now, just believe in myself and not be such a pushover. And because I'm a huge pushover, so, and whatever you learn in uni, it's it's good, but you do need to understand where the owners are coming from. I feel like if you get down to their level and match their energy, it does help. I always use human patients as an example, especially arthritis and things like that. It's really hard to get a client to start joint supplements. They are relatively expensive, and I always use my grandma as an example. When the weather gets cold, she starts complaining and she doesn't want to go anywhere, so that's essentially how the dog would feel. And then they can relate that it actually makes sense. It's uncomfortable, and I'm sure they have got some older relatives that's got arthritis, and then it is uncomfortable. It's just something can't fix, but we just have to manage. And regardless of how much you spend, things are going to get worse anyway. So try and get to a point where you can connect with the clients and get them to understand what the animals are feeling. It's not easy, but I think there are specific examples out there that you can tell them, and that will definitely make things a lot easier. That's what I find help with me.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Say don't listen to you. I think that's phenomenal advice that people should listen to. Believe in yourself and get on their level and match their energy. I think those are three really, really great pieces of advice in terms of communication. Would you recommend to other new grads to do an internship?
Yeah, 100%. My case is different because I was just ready for anything. I didn't have much expectations. I just wanted to learn how to deal with emergencies, and I didn't even bother if I, at the end of it, I got a certificate or anything. I just want to be a pilot. It's more of a personal thing. But definitely, if you feel like you're not comfortable with anything, you just have to put yourself in that position all the time, today, every time we get a call and there's an emergency, I'll be excited, actually. I'll be like, oh, what is it? I'll fight with my boss to get the case, because he'll be pleased, actually. So I'm actually excited for things like if there's an emergency coming in, but I think, which sort of tells a lot, because if I would recommend it, it's just, the learning curve is steep, but it's worth it. I think the trick is, I guess it's based on luck. It makes it a lot easier if you've got a good team behind you and it's part of a big, very supportive team. And I think it's a good thing, because you get so specialized in it that when you finish it, you just feel like you've done a lot. And kind of personally for me, I just feel like it's definitely worth it, and I would recommend it. I don't know what I'm talking about, it's
good
for me, because I also consider mine as an internship. I was promised 3 months of mentoring before I was needing to do soul charge, and then literally my fifth shift, I was sent below to Point Cook.
Yeah.
With a nurse, and then we had three ivermectin poisoning dogs coming in back to back. The owners decided to give it a horse wormer. He split a 500 kilo dose of horse wormer amongst three dogs, and they're all having seizures. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, the nice thing about there was it was a good team, and then there was always the other center to call. But yeah, it's still far away when you're one vet, one nurse, three seizuring things at once. Even if you know exactly what you're doing, that's still stressful.
It's good. I recommend it, because you learn from the best, and then you get thrown in the deep end, and then you just have to carry on. And because at the end of the day, it all depends on what you do, whether or not the animal makes it through. So, and that's probably the biggest driver for me to work. And then, because if I don't know it, I need to know it. I will go look it up and find look information. Then once you've done that, like it stays with you like forever, because you from then on you know what to do when this happens again. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just getting like starting doing the internship, getting the exposure, and it's definitely really, really important. And I'm glad I did it. Like, I'm glad like I did that before going to First Opinion. So I can only imagine the amount of mistakes I made in the First Opinion and picking up bad habits and just not working case up properly.
Yeah. How do you feel going from the emergency, which is obviously, you know, they were busy shifts. We were busy. And yeah. Then going to First Opinion, are you enjoying it compared to the emergency? How do you like it in terms of comparing?
I think by the time I left the internship, I was quite fed up with it. And because there's just so much changes, there's no consistency. And I was welcoming a new change in terms of lifestyle and like job and personal life. I think the biggest difference between the two is you just have to be more efficient in, well, things are a lot more efficient in emergency hospital side. You don't have small talks and you don't get nurses to look at the puppy and spend 5 minutes playing with it before getting a catheter in. Whereas emergency, the animal gets in, if it's being admitted, catheter's already in by the time you come through with the admission forms. So it's just more getting used to the pace of work. And I remember being really frustrated with my nurses at GP, where I came back like to start surgery, but I had to do the catheters and everything because nothing's been done yet. And then it took me a while to get used to that and not get angry at my nurses. But well,
I don't. Can you even get angry? I don't even think that was like part of your personality range. Maybe it's like an internal anger.
It's definitely internal. Like, apparently, I'm quite blunt. Like, I just say things as it is. And I had nurses coming to me like after knowing me like for 6 months, and they came to me like, "You're actually really scary, like the first few months working with you, because like I just don't know if you're upset because you're just so direct, and I can't like I don't know if you're okay with it or I should talk to you about it." So
that's probably the emergency personality that was ingrained in you to like, there's no time for small talk. I need this. It doesn't mean you're angry. It just means it needs to get done.
I think I'm definitely not as efficient as I was before. But I guess as long as we get the job done and things are done properly, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy in your GP job?
Yeah, like I'm definitely enjoying more surgery time, because at the moment, like, I'm doing all sorts now. Like, I literally just did leg amputation not too long ago.
Nice.
And then I've been doing a lot of like eye surgeries. Like, I don't like them. Like, cherry eyes, they're horrible. Like, and then, but the owners don't want to send them to specialists. So, I mean, they usually have higher rates of like failure. And those are tricky because you have to prep them that there is a high rate of the wound breaking down and then just pop back up. Then, so doing a lot of eye stuff. And then just casual, just normal routine de-sexing. So I like surgery, that's like what I enjoy doing. Otherwise, not so much foreign bodies. I haven't actually seen a GDV saying that. And now that I mentioned it, like, it's going to come in tomorrow.
Get ready. Read about that pexy.
Oh, we did a few pexies, like more like elective pexies.
Are you doing them prophylactically?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
If you can do a prophylactic pexy, you can do a GDV pexy. Prophylactic pexy is way harder because the stomach isn't like all distended and like stretched out for you.
Still a struggle. Like, I don't like them, but yeah.
No, pexies are hard.
otherwise, I'm actually, like, we got a good team. And again, as I mentioned, boss is super chill. Like, I get to make my own calls. And then if things get complicated, I'll get him to step in and go through things together. So, and because I'm trying to get better at reading x-rays, I'm still rubbish at diagnosing foreign body pattern and especially linear ones. So,
oh, they're difficult. They're easy to miss.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, and then so came up with like plan where we do like survey radiographs on like patients that's already anesthetized to see what normal is, and so we're trying to do that. And then you do one, and then you pick up incidental findings, and you tell the owners, and they were like, "Oh, I didn't know my dog was getting an X-ray." And then, yeah, so it's just good learning stuff. It's just like trying to improve on things that I don't feel comfortable. So
that's amazing that your boss is doing that and getting you on board. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's easy. He's just, as long as clients don't complain, like, he's happy. As long as the practice is it's making money, it's fine. So I was really lucky to work with them. And yeah, but otherwise, good team of nurses. They know what they're doing. And I think two of them got like proper nursing degrees. And so like they're all qualified people. And I never feel like I can't trust them. So
yeah. So the fact that you have this relationship with your boss where you feel less confident with the x-rays, so he's organized this, that obviously involved a conversation. So other people, if they're feeling like they're struggling in a certain area, how would you recommend approaching your boss to have that conversation? Because that's awesome that you have that. A lot of bosses wouldn't necessarily be supportive, and a lot of associates probably wouldn't know that this is even an option.
Tim's just really easy to talk to. It's more like a friend than a boss. Like it's I think in a way it's too nice as well. Like he gets pushed over really easy as well.
So the two of you together.
it's bad. Like we're both horrible, and I'm learning a lot from him, and we keep like right. We'll give clients discounts and stuff, like if they're nice enough to us. But I think approaching your boss, to me, it hasn't really been a problem. And it's just, I think at the end of the day, it's business. Like, you want to make money, and if you don't make money, you're not going to be, you can't survive, like, you won't be there. So, and depends what your boss like prioritizes. Like he's really into like service, like good client service. He doesn't like clients waiting more than 5 minutes in contact. I got told off so many times because like I just leave my notes to the end after each client to type them out, but like he wants them in straight away. So it's more into like service and just make sure they've got and service and make sure the client is looked after properly. And at the end of the day, as long as the animals are being looked after and we're doing what we do properly and the clients are happy, he's fine with it. How did I even approach him? Oh, actually, no, we get like this, we do like a monthly small informal meeting where you go in and just talk about things you want to improve on, and then next month you discuss what you've done, what have you organized to make that happen. So that was part of it. So
that's
it's
awesome.
More like something he has implemented himself. So he made it happen.
Yeah.
And
that's great.
I think he's doing a good job. Like he's good. Like, he's a good boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing approaching bosses are, I did literally end of last year ask for a raise. That was scary.
Good for you.
But I didn't go through Tim, which is the head vet, the practice manager. Okay. I went straight to his boss.
Because you didn't want to have the conversation with Tim?
Yes, because he's more like a friend with me. And I went straight to his boss.
Yeah.
Which was really funny because she comes in quite often just to check on things, and we just got along really well. And again, I just feel more like friends. So I just, we're talking about something else, about the growth of the practice. And then at the end of it, she was like, is there anything else you want to discuss about? I was like, oh yeah, can I get a raise, please? And then I literally saying, yeah, can I just get a raise? And then she was like, okay, how much are you looking at? And
did you have money prepared? Did you have an idea prepared of what you wanted?
I did.
Good.
I did.
Good.
So I literally just asked for a 30% raise.
Good.
And then I didn't even have to justify for it. Essentially, I asked for a few things. I want a raise. I want, because we didn't have any allowance for CPD. So I asked for allowance, and we didn't have access to, VIN. And my boss does, but I don't. So I asked for, three things, and I got all three. And, I didn't even have to justify for it. It's either I'm getting, severely underpaid, for the past 2 years.
Probably a combination of both.
Yeah, or, they're just desperate, So
yeah,
I think just ask. And again, at the end of the day, it's a business. It's between you and the company. And if the company feels like you're worth it, then they will pay you. But otherwise, if they're not in a position to do that and you feel like you need that money, then there's always somewhere else you can go. And
I'm so proud of you that you asked for it. I'm so happy. I'm so proud that you did it. That just, makes me happy. And it's so many times, I talk to vets and they're like, oh, I haven't gotten a raise. I haven't gotten a raise in 5 years. I'm like, okay, well, when did you last ask for a raise? And they're like, oh, I've never asked for a raise. I'm like, well, then how does your boss know you want a raise? They're probably so busy, they're not even thinking about it. And sometimes all you have to do is ask. So it's great that you did that. That makes me really happy. I'm glad.
Because I don't think they're going to fire you if you ask for it. The most they could do is turn you down awkwardly, and then
yeah,
it's up to them to make it up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad.
I was super happy when I left the room. I was like, ah. Should have done this 6 months ago.
So were you stressed out? Were you planning on doing it and feeling apprehensive about it?
I wasn't super stressed about it. I was talking to friends about it. I was I need a raise. And I was just it's probably something that I've just been bringing up with friends and family. But I wasn't super stressed about it. If I don't get it, I don't get it. I'll go somewhere else. And if I do, then it'll be ideal because, I don't want to make new friends and go somewhere else. Although I think I should. I feel like I need to go soak myself somewhere and just expose learn from different vets and how they do things.
Are you feeling stagnant?
The thing is, with current clinic, it's still relatively new. It's only been around 3 years. So when I joined it was open for a year, so we are growing really quick. We're just getting new clients all the time, and people are still coming in saying, I didn't know there's a vet here. So we are growing. When I started, it's 2 vets, 3 nurses, and now we're starting getting another vet, and we've got 5-6 nurses now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exploded, it's definitely but a lot busier. So in terms of learning, I think there's still a lot of things I want to do. I don't think there's anything specific that I'm looking into though, there's this x-ray thing, but there will be days I feel this is pretty boring, and then there there'll be days that I'll be like a little bit stressed where, oh, I don't know how to do this. And I just feel like it could get better services somewhere else.
But sometimes those are the best cases where you offer a referral and they decline and then you have to figure it out. So for me anyways, maybe it's bad, maybe it's selfish, but I kind of like the cases where you say you should refer this. This does require this, but if that's not a financial option, I will do my very, very best. And then you get to kind of push yourself with that safety net in a sense. Yeah. So you get to kind of do surgeries that you wouldn't necessarily otherwise particularly do or work up cases. So I find that kind of sometimes it's fun when they're limited. As bad as that sounds.
At the same time, it stresses me out though. At the end of the day, it's up to me. I guess if they can't afford burrows, then like, what's the next best thing for the animal? And yeah, I had a tail amputation as well, and then it went okay. Like, I haven't done one for so long, and did one, and did a leg amputation. And there was this Labrador with a, well, we're pretty sure it was like an osteosarc on its front leg. No, on its back leg. And then the owners couldn't afford surgery, but they couldn't afford referrals, so we ended up doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I wasn't there to do the surgery. It was a local that came in to do it. And then, unfortunately, the dog didn't make it. Surgery went fine, but it didn't make it. It went to emergency the same night. 5 hours after surgery, it just died. It had a seizure and died. So if that was me, I would feel awful, although I feel like it's probably nothing to do with surgery. So yeah, it's always something I've been very worried about if something were to go wrong, horribly wrong, and I don't know how I usually, how I would cope with it.
Yeah, it's, you know, that those things happen, right? And it's one of those, it's part of medicine. Sometimes bad things are going to happen in cases despite us, and sometimes we're going to screw up and it's going to be directly our fault and you're going to make mistakes. It's one thing that's really helpful for that is morbidity and mortality rounds. I don't know if your clinic does that, and that might be something that makes you feel more comfortable, especially if you're working with pet stock. You can gather the pet stock clinics around and have a community, and you know, once a month you guys meet and do a case a month. I've done a blog on morbidity and mortality rounds, but I found that really, really helpful. And Green Cross in Melbourne actually did it out of Frankston. So their AEC centers used to do it. And that's where I was exposed to it the first time. And it was so good to just sit down with the benefit of hindsight, no judgment, and just go pick apart a case with a fine-tooth comb and find all of the possible ways that you can learn from that case. And if you did feel responsible, and even if you did completely screw up, learning from your mistakes so it doesn't happen again and teaching others is one of the most cathartic things that you can do to heal. It's shown, like, that's literally the best thing that you can do to heal is do something so you know that mistake isn't going to happen in the future to other animals. So it can be a little bit raw putting yourself out there, especially if you're hesitant. But if you have a group where you feel safe, then it's really, really good in terms of learning and growing. And it exposes lots of people to one case, and then you can learn a lot from it. So if you're feeling stagnant and you're worried, it might be worth talking to like your pet stock regional manager and to see if the other clinics in the area want to band together. And you're saying, you know, see how other clinics are doing medicine. Well, that's a great way you can do it and still be in your job, because you'll see how they managed these difficult cases that come through. I think it's an underutilized tool that these corporations have these clinics all together. They should be kind of getting them together to talk and grow. I don't know. But yeah,
such a good idea. Yeah,
there's blogs on how it works and how to set it up and how it's organized, so you can check it out later.
Check it out, yeah.
The last thing I want to bug you about, because I know otherwise this is going to be 5 hours long, you're fun to chat to, is you said you do the sneaky ultrasound and you're not charging for things. And, you know, there's a time and place for that. But at the end of the day, you know, are you not valuing yourself? And is that something where you, you know, what are your thoughts on that, I guess?
I guess it's both me and him, like, we just like to just sneak in, like, casual ear flush after a dental. I mean, it's good for the dog, like, it's definitely good for the patient, and the owners usually really appreciate it. I think it's really hard to try to convince the owner to do multiple procedures at one time, and sometimes it's just quicker as well, just to do it and not charge for it. And as long as you're not using too much things like, you're not like using too much consumables,
but like, you're using your time and your knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh,
how much is your time worth? To deserve that raise, you need to charge for your time.
Yes. I'm definitely a lot better. Like, I used to underquote a lot of procedures and just doing things without charging it. But the thing is, my boss is even worse. Like, he's like, my estimates and his estimates, mine's like 30% more than what he charges normally.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just getting on board on the same page to do the same thing and be consistent. It is just hard. Like, I think it's hard to change him as well. I think he's just got his own method of doing things. And I don't know. Like, I don't know what a good solution is in terms of how to overcome this. I think personally, it's a part of me as well, being empathetic. Is that correct? Or just feel like I should do a bit more for the animal?
Yeah.
It's
hard. It's really it's hard, and there's always cases where you just have to do it. Like, you just have to suck it up and do it. We had a cat the other day with a broken leg, like transverse humeral fracture contracted up, and the owners couldn't afford surgery, and we're talking to them about, you know, surrendering versus not. And like, at the end of the day, the cat needs pain relief, and it needs it now, and you just have to do it. And then that one ended up, one of the vets that was on, her friend happened to know someone. So then they were able to get it to a GP that would do the amputation and rehome it. So our, you know, care throughout the night and all the fentanyl and everything, we just have to write off. And it's, you know, there's times where you just have to do that. But for the majority of cases, I think as long as you're doing it because it's that certain case instead of doing it because you're not valuing yourself and not valuing your time, I think that's where that conversation kind of needs to be had.
No, like, it's definitely not as bad as before, but things like buy now, pay later, like afterpay and stuff, like, they do help. So we've been using a lot of it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I wouldn't say it's like, it's regular basis, but it's just still quite regular though. I feel like I still undercharge a lot, like maybe like 1-2 cases a week.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel like, I should probably be doing this, but the owners can't afford it. Sneak it in and
yeah.
Tell them just sometimes it's just for peace of mind as well, like, and him really likes to use the excuse of like, as a learning case, like, we're gonna learn, so we're not gonna charge and do that. But otherwise, again, like, charging it, it's tricky because, like, ideally you should be charging for everything that you use. Like, we don't even, thing is, we charge, like, if an animal needs a sedation, we put through like a sedation fee and then an X-ray, and that's it. But I feel like we should be doing things like charging the actual drug itself, like maybe using methadone, like charge that, mm-hmm. not getting covered by like the sedation fee. But again, like it's a gray area. I don't know what depends on the company's policy as well, whether or not sedation covers the drug charges. Because I know with emergency, you charge everything. Like,
it always depends on the clinic, and you just never know. Yeah. Like, I work at a bunch of different emerge centers, and sometimes you charge the sedation fee plus the drug. Sometimes you don't. Half the time, you don't know what you're supposed to be doing. So locums often charge just one of them because they don't know what they're supposed to be doing. So having consistency and making it clear, I think, because a lot of times businesses set up their prices so that they can be financially viable, and then a lot of times we accidentally undercharge. I know there's times where, like, I was working at a clinic for a year and a half, and I didn't realize that I was supposed to charge apomorphine and an adduce emesis fee.
Oh, yeah.
I literally have been working for this clinic for 2 years, and I just found this out, like, last week. So I just always charge for the apomorphine tablet because that's what I used, but there's an induce emesis fee as well. So it's even when you're trying to charge appropriately, I think we undercharge so frequently, and I think my biggest issue is that I feel like it devalues our services to the clients, and then they feel that, well, that's what it's worth. And, you know, the other thing that happens is that if you are undercharging, then the prices across the board that the clinic has to set for the procedures and treatments have to go up to account for the things you're not charging for. So then the people that are paying appropriately, you know, are they compensating for the stuff that you're not charging for? So I'm really trying very, very hard to 100% charge for everything I do and not do the sneaky ultrasound. But, like, honestly, I did an enema on a dog 2 days ago, and I was like, it was just like a warm water lube enema with a red rubber. And it was just crying more than it should. And I'd given it buprenorphine, but then it was just like a little more quiet. And I was like, oh my God, did I poke through its colon? Does it now have, like, did I just put saline and then water into its abdomen? So I did a sneaky ultrasound because I was like worried that I had killed the dog. So, you know, it happens. It happens to all of us. But
I guess, I think you mentioned a good point where you pick something up in the middle of procedure and you want to do different tests to make sure, because if you pick up something and you just want to make sure it's fine,
mm-hmm.
it's just the whole getting in touch with the owners and letting them know.
Yeah.
I think that part of it can be a bit tricky as well, because they're not expecting that cost, although even if you charge appropriately beforehand, but you do like come across like unexpected findings. So especially with like dentals, like I think I'm doing fine with it, because like it's hard to know exactly how many teeth you're going to be pulling out until you break off tartar, and I usually start with a big estimate anyway. So we usually go up to like $1,000 for grade 4 dental, and that should technically be enough for any extraction. So
man, your dentals are cheap.
Yes, we do. So it's those three great one, grade 2, or grade 2, grade 3, actually, like, that you're not expecting any extraction, and then when you go in there, and then you find some, and then just, like, the matter of calling the owners and trying to get on board with pulling out. But generally fine, like, I think those are the times where it can be a bit tricky, because you can't get hold of the owners, should you do it?
I know.
I had one where the owners were definitely upset that I pulled teeth out without their consent.
Yeah.
But it was it coming out. And when because what really helped was taking pictures and show them what it looked like before. And because if you justify to them that if the cat or dog needs to come back 2 months to get it pulled out, it's going to cost them this much at that point, and they'll be more than happy to do it if they see that they actually get a better value to get it done now, although it's a bigger bill at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
just for today compared to, well, eventually it will be cheaper than two separate procedures. is. So
yeah, and better for the animal to not have two anesthetics, for sure. Yeah, dentals would be hard, man. That I do not miss dentals. That is like the two things that you've mentioned clinically: skin and dentals. Like that alone would keep me out of GP. I just, when people come in because their animal's like got itchy skin, I'm just like, oh, please, just give me like, give me a septic animal, give me a pyometra that has burst, give me a GDV, give me an Addisonian crisis. Please, God, just not itchy skin.
Like the bulk of my work now, dentals and skin.
Yeah.
Ears are horrible, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Are you doing a lot of cultures on your ears and like urine and stuff?
Actually, no. We did a few, but not not as much as we should be.
That was one where I used to not do urine cultures. I used to think, oh, people aren't going to want to pay for it. I just didn't have enough confidence to recommend it, even though I knew I should be doing them. And then one day I just said to myself, this is stupid. I'm just going to offer it. They can decline it. It's best medicine. I'm just going to offer it as best medicine. And I tell you, like 80%, they go for it without even argument. They're just, I'm just like, you know what? If your dog has multiple UTIs, we don't want to build resistant bacteria. There's negative side effects to antibiotics that we're learning since we've been using them and we're running into trouble now. So it's really best to get an answer and know exactly what bug we're fighting and know that we desperately need antibiotics because, you know, we don't want to give your dog antibiotics if he doesn't need it. And people are like, yeah, do the culture. Like, I'm so amazed. And I do so many cultures now. And just from simply offering it, it's like not even a hard sell. It's people, I think, as long as you educate them, they genuinely, for the most part, want what's best. And if they can afford it, they'll do it. And even people that have been tight where I'm like, you know, offering it, but not really expecting them to do it because they've already expressed financial constraints. I'm like, you know, we could do this. It is best practice, but if we want to try this and then you can check. And they're like, oh, no, no. Like the culture is important. I'm like, well, it is important. They're like, yeah, okay, then we'll do it. Like even these people that are like really tight are going for it. So it's amazing what people actually want to do. And I think as vets, we so often don't even recommend what is best practice because we feel bad about spending their money. And it's like, who am I to say what value they place on these things? And I never do things that I don't think the animal actually needs. I never oversell. That's just not part of my repertoire. I just offer what I genuinely think they need based on best medicine. And it's unbelievable how many people are just like, yeah, it's tight. I'll find the money, but let's go for it. And it's just offering it. Like he's just saying with the raise, you know, just ask for a raise, just offer best medicine. And you'll be amazed, I think, at how many people go for it.
I couldn't agree more. I'm definitely doing a lot more now. But the only thing I've struggled with, I haven't actually sent culture off before, but I would definitely doing like skin cultures, urine cultures, and I guess with ears, it's a little bit different. Unless it's got like a chronic
hepatitis
externa, it's just not resolved.
I don't deal with ears, like for the most part, so I don't think I've sent an ear culture off, but I usually don't see ear infections. I give them epiotic and then send them clean the ears out. I give them something for pain and then I send them to their GP. I'm like, you know what? This is a chronic issue. This is going to require ongoing workup. We need to know what drugs they've used before. I'm going to deal with the pain and the irritation now. We're going to clean out the ear. We're going to get it a cone. I do pain relief, cone. I clean their ears and I send them to their GP.
It's fine, So. Are you're not doing any GP work at the minute? Like, you're just mainly emergency still?
Yeah, I'm only doing emerge right now. I haven't done GP. I did some GP shifts when I was in Melbourne, but I haven't done any. I've done probably two or three GP shifts in the past two years. So, like, not a lot. I had to do a vaccine, and I was like, what am I doing? I was asking nurses, I was like, what? So wait, what's the vaccines that we're using now? And what's the protocol? How frequently are we doing it? So yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's a different world, but okay. I'm taking all of your time. So any other general advice that you have for new grads going out into the world in terms of, you know, just anything?
General advice. I don't know. I guess if you're a new grad, and things will be definitely daunting and well, for me at least, especially going to a different country to start something new. Get a bunch of good friends and make sure you've got support both at work and outside work as well. And really important to find somewhere to where the boss is really supportive and know that even if you make mistakes, they will be there having your back. So I think the thing is you will make mistakes, and don't get too bogged down by your mistakes, and that's when you learn the most, as you mentioned. And I definitely had a few of those experiences before, and once you do it once, as long as you don't do it again, like, you'll be fine. Like, and yeah, I don't even know. Like, as long as you try your best, and the rest will work out eventually. And I think at the end of the day, as long as you prioritize the animals' welfare, and you can't do anything too wrong, because like, you'll be so careful that everything you do, you triple check. And I mean, the worst nightmare is it's giving the wrong drug to the wrong animal, was an issue. So I think if you're being really careful and just be vigilant, and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. That's what I found out. Yeah.
Awesome. The other thing I wanted to mention too is with the x-rays, if you're ever stuck and you're worried, I started a Facebook group called Radiology Rounds. And it's just like a group of, like, Michelle's on it, and I think Tim, and then a bunch of my friends from Canada as well. So if you have an x-ray where you're like, do I cut this? Do I not? Like, what do I do with this? Oh my God, I have no idea. If you put it up there, people are pretty quick, because it's multinational. And any viewers, if you want to join that, it's just, I think, called Radiology Rounds on Facebook. I'll put a link to it in the little blog, but you can do that. And it's just a group of vets around, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 years experience, and happy to give their best input. So feel free to utilize that. I've done it a bunch of times, and my colleagues have been very helpful. So
that's good. I usually send them to surgeons in emergency. They're usually pretty good. They're usually pretty quick, but yeah, sometimes you get like no reply hours.
Yeah.
But that's definitely handy.
Yeah. Local eMERGE clinics are usually pretty good if you call them and just be like, what do I do with this? I do that even as an eMERGE doc, and I've done, what, five plus years of eMERGE, and I have cases where I'll call the other eMERGE centers and just be like, look, can I just pick your brain? This is what I think about this case. Do you, like, am I missing anything? And sometimes they'll be like, yeah, you're obviously missing this. And sometimes they're like, nope, I would do exactly what you're doing. So it's, you know, you're never too old to ask for help. And there's always an emergency center open somewhere. So you can always call an emergency center. I don't think anyone's going to, like, not help if you call.
That's true.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, thank you so, so much for chatting with us. I think you have very, very useful advice for new grads that they should listen to. And thank you for sharing your experiences. And we will look forward to seeing you next time. And maybe we'll bug you again in another year when you've asked for another raise.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, and it's lovely seeing you too.